Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the
music that plays. What the hell is going on, everybody?
I don't know.
We're going to Pluto. We're going right past the moon, all the way to Pluto, if you remember Wall Street. That stock's going to Pluto, man. I don't know. There is no rhyme or reason for anything of what's going on. But it doesn't matter because, again, this is what we talk about a lot is the ability you have to see the markets, let them do what they do. If you try to outsmart or outdo the market, you will find out that you'll be cruising for a bruising. And that is just the way it goes. You know, you cannot outthink or outsmart the market. And that is what I try to always make everybody understand. I mean, I've tried it before and not with very much success. So I can tell you, speaking from an experience, that it is not the way we can do things. I can tell you that you have to keep your powder dry, keep yourself ready to go, and let markets go do their thing. Now, interestingly enough, Dr. Alan Greenspan, they're all doctors, amazing. All the Fed guys are doctors, but I hate to have him a doctor of my body. I'd be dead already. I've watched Alan Greenspan for over 30 years, and I still, now that he's finished with his talk, I still don't know what the hell he said, okay? I don't understand it. What the hell is he talking about? There's so many things that he talks about that I don't think anybody understands. It's like hieroglyphics. And I wish once, one Fed chair would just put it in English and say, the economy's great, this is what we're going to do, this is what's going to happen, or the economy sucks, and this is what's going to happen. Not all of this hyperbole, formulas of what is, and I mean, I don't know. I didn't realize that to understand, I needed to go to a special school or a coding class to decipher the code that Mr. Greenspan laid out. I mean, I don't know if anybody caught it, but I don't know. I mean, again, I don't even know what he said. And that is, you know, I mean, we got something that's going to happen for 3 weeks and then this and that. I go, okay. Now, he did say that the euro currency wasn't going to work. Of course, he said that, you know, 30 years ago, and here we are. And we have, you know, issues and problems and a market that is totally in an insanity mode, courtesy of the Federal Reserve. You know, I think, you know, you could say, if you remember Superman, it's the NASDAQ. It's the housing bubble. It's the super bubble from the Federal Reserve. Now, again, that does not and should not affect your thinking. That should not affect what you're doing in the overall market. That should not affect anything. You should continue to do it as you do, investing as investing, trading and trading, and not concern yourself with the outside noise or the outside rhetoric, the footprints. Now, I mean, can I step in and buy the stock market here? No, I can't. I can't sell it because selling it would be, again, the guests are trying to pick the top end. And you know, again, I think we're at the top? Yeah. But do I know that this is it? No. I mean, you know, we can look at many, many different things and make a case for whatever we want. But typically, The case is simple. Right now, the buyers are overwhelming the sellers. And the sellers are backing away, knowing that the buyers are stepping in. And, you know, it's, you know, there's a bidding war going on right now. And, you know, sellers are not stupid. Okay, market makers are not stupid. All they're doing is they're widening out the market and they're walking away from it. They're allowing the traders, they're allowing people to step in and overpay. Okay, they're allowing them. Now, again, I'm not saying they're overpaying at the moment, but what I'm saying is that they are allowing the system to, you know, let the bidders look. If we got buyers, we'll just make the markets wider, and we'll just change the market faster. And I think that is what you're seeing now more than anything else, is the traders stepping in and allowing things to happen all that much faster. Okay, and you know, hey, who knows how long it can go? You know, nobody thought that 1987 could happen. Nobody thought that the Nasdaq would ever pop. Nobody thought that the housing would ever pop. And of course, nobody ever thinks that this is going to happen. Well, I guess nobody thinks it, so I guess maybe it's true. It can't happen. And, you know, we'll see. You know, I will say and go on record as saying it will happen. But again, I'm not going to tell you when. If I knew, I would tell you, but I don't know. Okay. And there's just so many things at play here, but you have to wind it back down. If you want the simplest explanation, there's no place to go. And as long as that is the case, as long as we have nowhere to invest our money, then the U.S. stock market is going to be the place. So, like it or not, believe it or not, and this is like a Ripley's, we are going to continue to see more of the same type of action of a market that will be totally irrational. But if we don't allow it to be irrational, if we think that we are smarter than it, well, then we're going to end up in the crapper. Because the market is the absolute. At the end of the day, okay, you know, if you lose money, you lose money, and they mark it out. If you make money, you make money, and they mark it out. But at the end of the day, it is how you end up, not how you start. And market predictions are like predicting anything else, okay? But here you have proof and evidence of what should happen next. And for now, the market should probably still go higher. I mean, again, I don't want to set the alarm bells off and say we can't. Of course you can. What's stopping it? And there's money flowing in. That's all we know. That's all we can watch, is the action and the market footprint that is continually left in. And the footprint is clear. Right now, they're still buying. So, and right now, the sellers are still moving away. And they're just making the markets wider and wider. They're allowing the chasers to chase it up. But again, it doesn't mean that the chasers are going to be wrong. It just means that the markets are going to move a little quicker. And we're going to continue to see these new highs pop out as we engulf on our trip to Pluto. But again, you know what? All those trips usually come with a return. And the return will go the other side just as much. But we'll see. You know, again, there's a lot of stuff out there. There's a lot of information out there. But at the end of the day, the market's the market. Why fight it? Okay, this is not the Terry Tin cigarette commercial. I'd rather fight than switch. We'd rather make money or sit it out than fight it. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure when you miss an episode, libertytalk.fm will get you the download of every Bubba Show. Okay, it also gets you a download of the Sporting Edge. In the same time, check out BubbaTrading.com. A lot of great stuff there for you. Check it out. This is The Bubba Show. I'm going to step out of here for a break, and I will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And, you know, obviously been a lot of clamoring about Hillary Clinton and whether she's guilty or not. And, of course, we saw the hearings. And if you were a Republican, you were against her. And if you were a Democrat, you were for her. And Comey got roasted by the Republicans and praised by the Democrats. But at the end of the day, what do you think the perception is about this? Okay. Is she truly above the law, if you believe? Anyways, I thought we'd check out what our man Bill Whittle has to say. So let's go check out Mr. Bill Whittle and his views of what happened with Hillary. Here we go.
Let's start by getting one thing out of the way right at the top. There is no question whatsoever that Hillary Clinton committed multiple violations of federal law. For example, U.S. Code Title 18, Part 1, Chapter 101, Section 2071, Paragraph A says that anyone who removes and doesn't return any federal records, regardless of classification, has committed a felony.
Secretary Clinton said all work-related emails were returned to the State Department. Was that true?
No, we found work-related emails, thousands, that were not returned.
Paragraph B of that same statute says that anyone who attempts to conceal or destroy these records has committed a second felony, which specifically bars the offender from holding any office in the United States government.
Secretary Clinton said neither she nor anyone else deleted work-related emails from her personal account. Was that true?
There's no doubt that there were work-related emails that were removed electronically from the email system.
And finally, let's talk about U.S. Code Section 793, gathering, transmitting, or losing defense information. In order to clear the legal bar for prosecution on that statute, that part of the United States Code, the prosecution would have to prove gross negligence on the part of Mrs. Clinton.
He said during his long statement that she was extremely careless. The first definition of gross negligence that comes up, if you take out the legal dictionary, is being extremely careless.
Any questions? FBI Director Comey, acting for reasons unknown and which do not make the slightest bit of difference to this case, laid out point by point the evidence of criminal violations, as well as exposing crooked Hillary's initial public statement as contempt for the American people so grand that it would have to be sifted through a very fine filter to find a single particle of that statement that was actually true. What David Horowitz called the most breathtaking fix in American history was so flagrant, so audacious, so shamefully and obviously crooked, and reeked of such bottomless contempt that I take exception to the idea frequently stated that they must take us for idiots. They don't take us for idiots. They take us for cowards. They know that we know, and they don't care. Why don't they care? Well, they don't care because we didn't do anything about changing implementation dates on Obamacare on a whim. We didn't do anything about the illegal, unconstitutional, dictatorial executive orders on something as hugely important as immigration. We didn't do anything when crooked Hillary cut back security in Benghazi while Ambassador Chris Stevens was begging for more security. And we didn't do anything when the president and the secretary of state, who knew within 15 minutes that the Benghazi attack was well planned, well coordinated, and clearly foreseen and foreseeable, when those two people stood there in front of television cameras and claimed repeatedly that the disaster was the result of an obscure YouTube video and told the relatives of the heroes that died because of her contempt that she and the president were going to get the filmmaker responsible for their son's deaths. Of course the fix is in. Of course it is. Of course we see right through it. They don't care. They've got us pegged. Oh, and one more little itty-bitty thing. Surely some of those top secret and above top secret emails went to and from the President of the United States of America. Now, fortunately for the Commander-in-Chief and the presumptive future Commander-in-Chief, laws don't apply to top Democrats. Laws are for the little people, for the great unwashed army of rubes and hicks out there in flyover country. You know, you and me. President Obama will not protect the American people. President Hillary Clinton will not protect the American people. The Justice Department will not protect the American people. The politically appointed generals in the Pentagon won't protect the American people. And now we realize that the Federal Bureau of Investigation won't do it either. The only thing left to protect the American people is the American people. Our future and our freedom will end one way or another, back where it started with we the people. We the people We'll have to defend ourselves from this government, defend ourselves from this rough beast. It's our come at last that we have allowed to go slouching towards Washington to be born. No, it's just us now.
And that is, and I think we're seeing a lot of that evidence that it's just us. And if us don't stand up, then we're going to have a lot more of these problems that we're seeing. And, you know, violence doesn't solve the problem. What solves the problem is organization and saying that, hey, this is BS. Hey, we need to fix this. Hey, vote them out. Now, again, you're not going to change the system in one election, but it has to start somewhere. And the somewhere is where we, the dominant middle class, because, you know, we still have enough of us between all of us to overcome. But until we do that, it won't be. And that is the message from here, is that whether she's guilty or not, okay, whether she did or she didn't. Again, we can twist the laws and the rules any way we want. You heard it for hours on the Hill. But when it's all said and done, okay, we know that the original framers, the founding fathers, the Constitution is not being followed to the letter of the law, nor is it becoming even close to the letter of the law. And that becomes the bigger issue. And the issues are simple that need to be addressed by us because we are the people, and we should be for the people. And to me, that becomes more of the bigger problem, because that's how we're going to eliminate the problems that we see, is by taking care of business the way it's got to be done. And that's why I continue to warn of some sort of revolt in this country. And again, you're seeing it by some of the criminal activity. Now, I don't want that kind of revolt. I want, you know, a organization. You know, if you're watching, you can see what we've talked about on this show for years is the United States turning into socialism. You hear people talking about, you know, overtaxing people that make too much money. Well, really? Isn't that why you came here? Isn't this the land of opportunity? Isn't this where if you work hard and you have a chance to be successful, that you can? And many people give back because they're so successful, but now they want to tax more. Is this really where the direction that we want to go in? Again, 240 years ago, these were the exact same reasons why we had the revolution. So if you don't think that the potential exists again, I think you should think again, because certainly the country is about ripe. You know, as the stock markets are ripe for a meltdown, the country is ripe for some sort of uprising. Now, hopefully, the uprising will be orderly and organized and not something ridiculous like what we're seeing now. But these are problems that you're going to face and we're going to face in this country unless we take care of business, unless we do it right. And it starts with voting. It starts with organizing. It starts with taking care of business and not quietly slumping off into the woods. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. When you miss an episode, you go to libertytalk.fm. That gets you The Bubba Show. That gets you The Sporting Edge. And when you go to Bubba Trading, that gets you the education you need to be one of those making more of the dough. So make sure you check out BubbaTrading.com and see what we're doing. In the meantime, we're going to step out for a break and come back with some more from Mr. Bill Whittle after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialati, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. We got our man Bill Whittle talking about online, making money online. Let's go to our guy, Mr. Bill Whittle.
Money on right the internet? Now. That's impossible. It's not impossible for everybody. Some people are out there doing it consistently. We've talked before about how individuals occasionally strike it rich. But how do you succeed in making money off the internet consistently? Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle here with Steve Green and Scott Ott, and this is your right angle on the new economy of the internet, which is just beginning to emerge from the traditional industrial era economy that all of us know and love. Because right now, guys, and it's kind of hard to believe, the fact of the matter is you can make a living, and sometimes you can get fairly wealthy just for being famous. You don't have to be famous for anything. You just have to be famous. If you're known, then you can make some money. Steve, let's just talk about this remarkable idea. It's a result of us moving into the information age. When we were kids growing up, there were three networks on TV. There was ABC, CBS, and NBC, and you watched Yeehaw, Hee-Haw on Sunday night because you didn't want to watch 60 Minutes. Those were your choices. Then we got to 40 channels, then we got to 300 channels. Now there is essentially no channels. People just go to Hulu or Netflix or iTunes or iMovies or whatever and watch what they want, and a lot of people just watching on YouTube. So what happened, Steve, was that once a show like Friends could put 30 million eyeballs in one place, there are no 30 million eyeballs in any one place now. They're all scattered all over the place, and people are making money just a few cents per click, a few cents probably per thousand clicks. But if they get 30 million views, they can do something consistently right. Isn't that odd?
Well, it is. Actually, you know, you reminded me of something. I'm going to share a personal story here that is only tangentially related to this, but I love it. And it shows the power the three networks had. My Jewish businessman grandfather had this tradition. I mean, he was the very definition of urbane. He was well-dressed. He was witty. He was successful. And every Saturday night before going out to dinner, usually at Al Baker's restaurant back in St. Louis, he would sit down in his bathrobe after his shower before he put a suit on and watch Hee-Haw. He loved that show. And I learned to love it, too. And she was gone. So there you go. What's brilliant here is the internet has allowed for the democratization of making money in entertainment. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, 10 years ago, I don't think any of us would be making videos. And if we were, we certainly wouldn't be making any money on it. I remember the very first time they tried to incorporate YouTube into politics. It was the so-called YouTube debate during the 2008 election. And I actually put up some videos for this thing. This was before even PJTV, and PJTV was a trailblazer. And I learned that with a lot of effort and buying some software and some equipment that I really shouldn't have been spending the money on, and so with a lot of expense and a lot of effort, I could make some really crappy YouTube videos to send up to to ABC News or CNN or whoever it was doing this. And a couple of them were kind of funny. There was one I was getting drunk while waiting outside Fred Thompson's bus in Iowa.
I am shocked to hear that.
He was getting drunk inside the bus.
He was, and I missed that man. But in 8 short years, we've gone from this point where in order to get famous on the internet, you had to either have a sex tape or hurt yourself or do something like that, to a point where anybody who is reasonably intelligent and has something to say in an intelligent way can get a message out there and attract an audience. And as long as you know how to target that audience, you can make some money. Maybe not a living. Maybe not yet, but we're working on it.
Some people are making a pretty good living. Yeah. Scott, we talked before about individual cases. The girl who was a millionaire at 7 or 8 because everybody liked her style, and some girls are making thousands of dollars just by unwrapping Disney presents and so on. But I'm actually talking about making a survivable business out of it. Now, one of the things that you can do is you can actually collate other people's data, collate their content, rather. And one of the most interesting sites that does this is a site called WatchMojo.com. Now, WatchMojo.com will do something like, I don't know, a top 10 list almost every day. Top 10 movies that should have been failures but were successes. Top 10 villains in science fiction movies. Top 10 twist endings that ruined the film. And since they're putting these things out almost every day, they're getting millions of views. Some of them are getting more than that. And they're dealing with movies, so people are interested. And they're constantly doing this. So you don't even have to have your own talent, Scott, do you really? I mean, you can just kind of go out there and just make something interesting.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the old Steve Martin routine from way back. This is the 1970s. And to paraphrase, it's like, you can become famous and wealthy making internet videos. Yes, you can become famous and wealthy making internet videos. Step one, first, become famous. Next, you know.
$1 million.
$1 million, yes. It's amazing. It literally is. You know, in the old days, they used to say there's freedom of the press in this country for the man who owns one. And now,
correct,
we all own a TV station. I mean, even if you have nothing but a phone that connects to the internet, a smartphone, you have a broadcast facility. And, you know, we have a little bit more than that here, but you have the ability to get your thoughts and ideas out there. But it just throwing it out there doesn't guarantee an audience. There's got to be something engaging about it. There's got to be something where you can connect with people. Yes, you can collate, you can aggregate. In many ways, our buddy Glenn Reynolds at InstaPundit did a text version of this.
That's where exactly
he essentially gathered everything that was happening out there. And once it started catching steam, you know, people were sending him stuff, say, have you seen this? Have you heard of this? James Toronto does the same thing at Best of the Web Today because people send him ideas all the time, and he becomes an aggregator and has been very successful at doing that. What I love about internet video is that you can be yourself. You can be quirky and unique the way you are, and there's some group of people out there who love you, who want to see you do what you do, or who want to see you fall off of things and get hurt, as Steve earlier suggested. Yeah. And I think we really have gotten into an era that was unimaginable even to my grandfather, where you can pursue something that is your true joy and find a little group of people out there who not only will enjoy that with you, but who become evangelists for you. And, you know, if you decide that you want to do a membership model, it only takes a few thousand people to provide a nice living for somebody on a membership model. Or you can, if you want to do, you know, advertising through YouTube and stuff like that, you've got to have millions of people coming in. But the world is your oyster now. And if you've got a camera and a connection, go at it.
That's right. The internet is essentially an infinitely large, infinitely flat plane where anybody can get on there, and talent, if lightning strikes, will occasionally win out over time. You can develop your own audience. The three of us started this way as writers, and then we got into doing videos and so on. So look, there are occasional cases where you're just simply hit by lightning. Something you just happen to film gets on the internet and goes huge. Charlie Bit My Finger is a classic clip, and look at the number of hits on that. And of course, Gagnon's style was seen by billions, billions of views, billions. But we're talking again about people that try to make a living doing this. And there are a number of people out there. There's Smarter Every Day, which is terrific. It's just great content. He's got a advertising supporter as well. But Dustin is out there teaching us about what happens, what are the physics of firing a gun underwater, and how does a helicopter auto-rotate. It's a great video. And I think my personal favorite is a group of guys, is really just two guys with some guests, who actually have made enough money by the millions of views that they've gotten to develop a pretty sophisticated green screen program, and they shoot on one day, and they have tremendous makeup. They do their own music tracks, and they do the pre-records, and they run it back. And I am talking about these two guys. So I think, look, this is some of the stuff is not family oriented in terms of language, but these guys are called Epic Rap Battles of History. And I suppose it probably just started as one idea, but it's like Abraham Lincoln versus Chuck Norris. It's Julius Caesar versus Shaka Zulu. It's
John
Eastern
Maynard Keynes versus Friedrich Hayek.
There you go.
Yep, that was
Eastern
a great one.
Philosophers versus Western philosophers. It's Stephen King versus Edgar Allan Poe. It's Lewis and Clark versus, you know,
Laverne and Shirley.
The two guys from it's Lewis and Clark versus Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and it's absolutely brilliant. The lyrics are brilliant, the structure is brilliant, the music is terrific, and so I thought we'd leave us with just a few seconds of what I think is just some of the best content on the internet, Epic Rap Battles of History,
and of course Bill Whittle and Scott and those guys, they always have some great stuff to bring out, and they're real, and I think that's what's more important, and I think that's what I enjoy the most, is the reality that they bring, you know, when you look at things, and you know, they're just so straight up, and it really pretty cool when you look at what's going on, and you kind of wonder, you know, what's next and how are we gonna, you know, get ourselves to the next level, and those are great ideas, and those are things that, you know, whether you want to be a trader or you want to try to do something else, I mean, again, it's about you know, using the tools that are available to you today, and that is something that I think is very, very important, is again, tools that you have available today is what you want to be able to use and to be able to create your own success. And that was Bill Whittle and Scott Ott and crew. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. As you know, we're always here for you. Make sure when you miss an episode, you go to libertytalk.fm. Get the download of the show every day, because we want to make it on the internet as well. So go to libertytalk.fm. And, of course, we've got a lot of other great shows there for you. When you also want to look at some more information on how to make it successfully trading, you go to BubbaTrading.com, and we've got a lot of great ideas, and we have some nice programs for you there. In the meantime, this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm going to step out of here for a break, and I will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, will be right back. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and we're going to go back to our guy, Mr. Bill Whittle, because we do have some serious stuff, and of course, obviously the sadness of what just happened in Dallas. But let's hear what they have to say about this. Here we go. Let's go to Bill Whittle and crew.
For their safety and for your liberty, I'm Scott Ott with Bill Whittle and Stephen Green. This is Right Angle, a special three-part Right Angle this week. We're calling After Dallas, and it's made possible by your monthly investment at BillWhittle.com. Well, with the slaughter of the Dallas cop killer ambush still fresh in our minds and allegations from the left that police target black people, let's back up and consider a broader issue. Why do we have police patrolling the streets at all? I stumbled upon an essay by Tom Mullen in the Huffington Post from a while back, I believe July 2015, that sparked this discussion. He raises some challenging questions. For example, firefighters don't patrol your neighborhood to prevent fire. They wait for the call. Why can't police do so as well, especially in an era when virtually every person carries a phone? Even when patrolling, police rarely come upon a serious crime in progress. Just having them out on patrol puts their lives in jeopardy. Second, our Constitution indicates that citizens bear primary responsibility for their own defense, see the Second Amendment, and that we're not subject to preemptive searches, and government agents can't investigate a crime that we've not yet committed. If you argue that a police presence deters criminals, you could also argue it enhances the sense that we live in a surveillance state with Big Brother watching, cramping our liberty. And finally, several of the recent police actions that resulted in the death of a suspect at the point of arrest or in custody started when patrolling officers noticed relatively minor infractions of law, selling cigarettes without a license, a broken taillight. Now, Stephen Green, as a little L libertarian, I'd expect you to embrace the notion of cops responding to crime, not anticipating it. But wouldn't getting cops off the streets just cede urban neighborhoods to the gangs and the thugs?
Yes, and no, and no, and yes. This is such an evolved issue, and it goes so back, and it goes back a 100 years, really, when we started using the police almost as social engineers. Look, this drug war has flooded our cities with so much money, and it's trained probably two or three generations now of urban kids who would normally be entrepreneurs, who would normally be legal capitalists, that the way to riches is a life of crime. And in response to that, in response to corrupting these youth with all of this drug money, we've turned the police into they look like an occupying army. They've got the body armor on. They've got the big weapons. They've got the helmets, the riot gear, the whole thing. And so they feel like an invading and occupying army, and sometimes they act like an occupying army. If you're going to have that, boy, I'll tell you, you got to keep these guys back in their barracks. What I would like to do instead is have a reasonable number of laws to drop all this militarization, to end the no-knock SWAT raids, to end this stupid drug war, and get back to neighborhood policing, where your neighborhood cop isn't a threat. He's somebody like you who was probably hired from next door. He's a neighbor of yours. That's what he does. It's somebody you went to high school with. It's somebody you can trust. He's there to reassure you, to be a friendly presence. Instead, we have this army of occupation in our cities, and it's an un-American thing to have, isn't it? Didn't we fight a revolutionary war against that kind of thing?
Well, Bill Whittle, the famous broken window strategy, which I am surely going to mischaracterize in my brief description of it here, that purportedly cleaned up New York City under Mayor Rudy Giuliani, seemed to go in the opposite direction, beefing up patrols, cracking down on minor crimes. Let's face it, as debased as the culture has become, doesn't government need to act with a preemptive heavy hand, a perpetual display of force?
Well, that's putting it a little strongly, Scotty. I don't think the broken... First of all, let me say I think the broken windows policy worked supremely well. I mean, there's no question it worked well. I mean, all you have to do is just look at the crime rates in Manhattan when Giuliani took over, and there's your evidence. It's solid evidence. To have police presence and to have police responding to the idea of the broken windows policy is, if we don't enforce laws against small crimes, then people will know that this is an area where we don't enforce laws against large crimes. If it turns out that windows are broken in this neighborhood, that's a sign that this is a lawless neighborhood, and off you go. So I think the policy works really well. Having a police presence on the street does not necessarily mean a violation of anybody's constitutional rights. I mean, unmarked police cars might be a different story, but having a police presence out there is certainly not doing that. You mentioned that we don't put firemen out on patrol. Well, there's a couple reasons for that. First of all, it usually takes a fire longer to develop than a violent crime. Violent crime's usually over in 10 or 15 seconds. A fire, you start with smoke, and usually takes minutes, several minutes, maybe almost half an hour before the fire's really going. And secondly, fires don't crouch and wait for fire trucks to go by before they start their own fires. Fires don't operate that way. We have to make – I'm not saying we need to make constitutional compromises. I think that's the way you lose your liberty. But we have to understand what is crossing the line and what is not. I think a police presence on the street is not a violation of anybody's constitutional liberty. The idea that somebody claimed that I wasn't going to go vote because there was a police car parked within 100 yards of the polling station, that is genuinely a case of, that you've got something to be a little worried about. So generally speaking, I'm in favor, but I do want to say one thing, and that is very quickly, aside from these no-knock raids and stuff and increasing militarization, most police departments need a tactical squad, and more of them are going to in the future. But when you start hearing things about police officers just shooting dogs, you know, they come to do like a routine parole thing or something, and some little poodle or little terrier's just yapping. He's 2-3 feet away, and he's yapping. And time again, you're hearing about these officers having to shoot this dog in self-defense and things like that. I saw a video about an officer walking through a park. He was just clearly provoking people. I mean, there's no question he was provoking them. We hold our policemen to a higher standard when we lose them. We honor them with patrols down freeways, and this is entirely appropriate because they risk their lives for us. But we also have to hold them to a higher standard of behavior as well. Because they have so much power, on-the-spot power, when we find policemen or entire departments that are abusing that power, we as a civilization need to crack down on that very quickly.
And let me just say this in anticipation of the comments under this episode and on Facebook and Twitter. Those kinds of cops, if you're outraged at what Bill and Steve just said about cops who behave that way, we're clearly not talking about you, your husband, or your wife who wears blue. Listen, years ago, I read an article about a study where they removed traffic signals from intersections. As it turned out, drivers regulated their own conduct through the intersection with fewer accidents. When I was a reporter for a college newspaper, I covered a massive anti-war rally in Washington, D.C. Police were out in force, some on horseback, wearing helmets, some bearing riot shields and batons. At the time, I remember thinking that if the cops weren't there, the protesters would have no one to holler at. Their presence made an ugly incident more likely. When I was a Christian camp director, we once had some defiant trespassers on the property. Now, in that rural setting with no local police, the state police were about 20 minutes away. I had to deal with it while calling the police, who arrived long after the perps were gone. The case went to court. I testified. The criminals were fined. In Williamsport, Pennsylvania, years ago, I once ran down a purse snatcher, told him to give me the purse, and surprisingly, he did, slinking away only to be picked up later by police based on my description. When I showed up to testify in court, he suddenly pleaded guilty. Now, these are all relatively minor incidents, but so is much of what the police officers deal with on a day-to-day basis. Yet in the course of coping with mundane infractions, they often put their lives at risk and sometimes the lives of others. It would be worth the experiment in some city to pull back the patrols and let the people regulate most of their own behavior, calling the cops only when they can't handle it themselves. It would be interesting to see the results of that study. Constant surveillance by street cameras and police patrols is not only antithetical to a free society, but it may actually endanger more lives while restricting our liberties.
And what do you think of Bill Whittle and crew on this? This is an interesting debate. I'd love to hear your opinion on what they had to say about the police. I think it's interesting. But give me your opinions. And in the meantime, when you miss a show, you get to go to libertytalk.fm and load it up. Also, the Sporting Edge is available there for you as we cover the British Open this weekend. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you check out BubbaTrading.com. And more importantly, everybody have a wonderful weekend. If you're a golf fan, enjoy the British Open because it's on early, especially if you're in California. But everybody enjoy. Have a great weekend. As always, thank you so much for being a part of The Bubba Show. This is Todd Bubba Horowitz. Everybody have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.